Tonight on the Daily Debrief, disturbing details about the death of a Georgia beauty queen.
Ryan had told him that he killed Tara.
One defendant's brother's plan to help get him out of jail before trial backfires.
Your brother has in fact confessed to killing Tara Grinstead.
Yes, ma'am.
This is the Daily Debrief for Monday, February 11th.
And good evening, everybody. Welcome to the Daily Debrief. I'm Aaron Keller, along with Linda Kenny Bodden. A hearing today in a Georgia murder cold case has provided new details into how a beauty queen died. Ryan Duke is charged with aggravated assault, burglary, and murder in the death and disappearance of Tara Grinstead. Grinstead went missing from her Ocilla, Georgia home in October 2005. Duke is said to have removed Grinstead's body from her residence. Grinstead was a beauty queen and teacher who crossed paths with Duke at the high school where she taught history and he was a student. Duke today asked for bond. In other words, he wants to get out of jail pending trial. Here, the defense lays out the legal standard necessary and says Ryan Duke meets the standard to get out.
We are asking for bond for Ryan Duke. He has been incarcerated since February when this indictment was rendered, when he was arrested in this case. He's been incarcerated without any bond. He has not had a bond hearing, has not had a request for bond.
You were the first. Yes.
This is the first time anyone has sought a bond in this case. And Judge, the statute, OCGA 17-6-1, enunciates what is to be considered when granting a bond. And the statute says that a bond should be granted in Mr. Duke's case if these four criteria are met. The first one is that he poses no significant risk of fleeing the jurisdiction or failing to appear as required. The second is that he poses no significant threat or danger to any person, community, or property. The third is that he poses no significant risk of committing a felony pending trial. And the fourth is that he poses no significant risk of intimidating witnesses or otherwise obstructing the administration of justice. And Judge, I don't believe today that you will hear any evidence contrary to those four grounds. I don't believe that the state will present any evidence that Mr. Duke is a flight risk, that he will not appear as required by this court. I don't believe that you'll hear any evidence that he poses a significant threat or a danger to any person, community, or property. I don't believe you'll hear any evidence that he poses any significant risk, or even risk at all, of committing a felony pending trial. And I don't believe that you'll hear any evidence that he poses a risk of intimidating witnesses or otherwise obstructing the administration of justice. And without the state proving those four, any of those four the factors, then he should be granted a bond.
The defense called the defendant's brother to discuss where he would be living, working, even eating, should he be allowed to get out of jail.
Since 2005, the date of this alleged offense, since that time, has Ryan lived in either Ben Hill or Warren counties?
Yes.
Your family owns some property out on Pleasure Lake. Is that where Ryan was living when he was arrested?
Yes.
Okay. And have you all owned that since high school?
Yeah.
Approximately? Okay. So it's been several decades.
Yes.
Okay. If Ryan was granted bond, is that where he would be living?
Yes.
Do your cousin, I know you have an aunt named Linda Bullington, is that your aunt? Okay. And do her children run a restaurant in this area?
Yes.
What's the name of that restaurant?
It's Dixie
Kitchen. Dixie Kitchen, okay. And if Ryan was released on bond, would he be able to work there?
Yes.
Okay. Does Ryan have a car?
No, he does not.
Does he have a driver's license?
No, he does not.
Does he have a passport?
So, the defense wants to make out the case that Ryan Duke is not a flight risk. The prosecution, however, painted Duke as an awkward recluse without job skills and a history of drug use on top of that.
Be around people, he gets nervous.
He has anxiety, yes.
He has anxiety. Yeah. What would he be doing at Dixie Kitchen?
From my understanding, he would be working in the back, cooking.
Okay. Ever worked at a restaurant?
No.
Now, part of that anxiety, let's talk about that. Your brother has had a history of drug abuse, correct?
Yes.
And he has also had a history of alcohol abuse.
Yes.
You familiar with the fact that he's had two prior convictions for DUIs?
Yes.
And in fact, he's even been at least investigated for forging checks in your name, correct?
Yes.
And those were checks that belonged to you.
Yes.
That he wrote at,
Was it Harvey's here again, Osceola?
I don't recall.
But he wrote those without your permission?
Yes.
Was he ever charged with that?
Yes.
Do you know if he was convicted of that?
No.
Is it my understanding that in lieu of him being convicted or prosecuted on that case, that's when he went to the military?
I'm not 100% sure. I know my father paid the fines and paid the money back, so he would not be arrested.
Your father paid that off so that he would not get in trouble?
Yes.
The prosecutor continued there, talking about the defendant's stint in the military, and it was troublesome.
How long was he in the military?
I'm not sure.
Less than 6 months?
Objection. I'm going to allow. Go ahead. If you know the answer to her last question, was it less than 6 months?
I'm not really sure. I know it was around that amount of time, but I'm not sure.
It was around 6 months. And he actually went AWOL from the military, correct?
He did.
Which means he left without permission.
He did.
And did he come back to Osceola when he left, or do you know?
He went to my father.
He went to your father?
Yeah.
And he did that because of emotional issues he was having at the time, correct?
Correct.
Now, this father who you've been referencing, who helped him out when he was in trouble and who helped him out when he went AWOL, that's the father that has now passed away, correct?
Yes.
After asking about the Ryan Duke's two suicide attempts, the prosecutor asked brother Stephen Duke about the night Tara Grinstead was murdered.
Now, in 2005, when this occurred, you were actually living with your brother here. Actually, I think it was in Ben Hill County. Is that correct?
Yes.
So you and Ryan and off and on, Bo Dukes, were living in the same home?
Correct.
And in fact, to your knowledge, you were home the night that the murder occurred?
From what I have been told, yes. I don't remember that time frame, but I was told that I was there, yes.
And certainly during that time frame, your brother did not tell you about killing Tara Grinstead.
Right.
He did not tell you about burning the body of Tara Grinstead.
No.
And the whole time you were living in the house with him and had no knowledge of any of this.
Correct.
The question is whether Ryan Duke was holding a deep, dark secret from his brother. Next, the prosecution brought up Ryan Duke's alleged confession.
You're familiar with the fact that in this case, your brother has in fact confessed to killing Tara Grinstead.
Yes, ma'am.
And you're familiar with the fact that he has admitted to burning her body along with Bo Duke.
No, ma'am.
You're not familiar with that.
No.
You don't know that he's admitted to burning her body over several
days? I have not
days?
Heard the confession, but he had told me that he did not burn the body.
I didn't ask you what you've heard as far as the hearing. You're familiar with the fact that he is charged with that, correct?
Yes.
And you're saying that he's not told you whether or not he in fact burned the body?
Correct.
Now, the statements that you're talking about that he's made to you denying those have only been made since he's been in jail, correct?
Yes.
And would it be fair to say those have only been made within the last year?
No.
When did he first tell you that he did not kill Tara Grinstead?
One of the first couple times I went and visited him.
And how soon was that after his arrest?
As soon as he started seeing family. Me and my father went and seen him.
And how soon was that?
I don't recall. I know it was a little bit of time after he had been
Was it more than a
jail.
Month?
Maybe.
More than 2 months?
I really don't remember. Maybe 2 months.
And that was when you specifically confronted him about it, correct?
I asked him about it, yes.
And at that point, he denied it to you?
Yes.
The prosecutor also said the defendant didn't want to talk to his own mother. Then the prosecutor cut into more details of the defendant's alleged confession.
He's told you that he was familiar with the fact that Tara Grinstead had been killed.
Yes.
And he was familiar with the fact as to who had done it.
Correct.
He was familiar about how it was done.
He never told me how.
Was he familiar with the fact that her body had been burned?
Yes.
Yet from 2005, when you were living with him until he's locked up in the Irwin County Jail, he never once mentions to you the fact that he knew you had killed Tara Grinstead.
No, ma'am.
And he never once mentions to you the fact that he knew that her body had been burned.
No, ma'am.
And he never once mentioned to you any knowledge of this murder whatsoever.
No, ma'am.
And what of the accused co-conspirator in the death of Tara Grinstead? His name is Bo Dukes, and this defendant's brother does not seem to like him.
Why were you trying to kick Bo out?
I wasn't really friends with him.
Okay. Was there any other reason?
He just was strange. I wasn't particularly fond of him.
Okay. after Ms. Grinstead went missing, then Ryan started trying to get Bo out of the house. Do you remember that?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. And it was quickly after that that he tried to get Bo out of the house. Do you remember that?
Judge, objection. She's still leading the witness.
Do you remember?
Sustain that objection.
I'll rephrase it. Okay. Do you remember Ryan trying to get Bo out of the house?
Yes, Ryan was trying to get Bo to move out after I had moved out, and Bo would not work and contribute to paying rent, light bill, and things like that.
Do you remember if it was something that happened quickly?
It wasn't very long after I moved out and them two moved in or got a house together.
Next, the lead investigator in the case told the co-defendant's story of what happened to Tara Grinstead. Naturally, the story of the co-defendant, Bo Dukes, implicates this defendant, Ryan Duke.
Day before Tara didn't show up for work on that Monday, he said that Ryan had come to him at their house that they were living at together in Fitzgerald, and that Ryan had told him that he killed Tara. And Bo said, you know, based on what he had told him, he didn't believe him initially. He said he thought he was messing with him, just thought he was joking around. He didn't know. He didn't believe him. As the investigation started on that Monday, Tuesday, and into Wednesday, he indicated that people had been talking more and more about the case. It was obvious that there was something going on, that Tara was missing, and that he reapproached Ryan again and basically said, what do you mean you killed? Basically, elaborate, you know, tell me more. What did you do?
Did the defendant elaborate to Mr. Dukes about what occurred?
Bo said he did, yes.
And did Mr. Dukes, Bo Dukes, indicate whether or not he then saw the body of Tara Grinstead?
He did. They drove. They got into Bo's truck, and Ryan directed him to the orchard, directed him to a location in the eastern part of the orchard. It's the back corner of an orchard of the orchard, and that Tara's body was lying in a tall, grassy area adjacent to the pecan orchard. Her body was nude. She had what Bo classified as what he thought to be purpling strangulation marks around her neck. He noted that she had a belly button ring, but once again, she was nude. He indicated there were signs of lividity, rigor. There was animal activity, insect activity, ants on her body. So yes, he did see her body.
That investigator went even further and explained why authorities never really found Tara Grinstead's body. This testimony is based mostly on interviews with co-defendant Bo Dukes.
Did he indicate if they did anything with the body, that being he and the defendant in this case, did anything with the body after Bo Dukes saw the body?
Yes, Bo indicated that he and Ryan, that Ryan was begging him to help him, that he'd messed up, he was begging him to help him, and that Bo and Ryan loaded Tara's body into the back of Bo's truck, and they drove deeper into there's a pine tree grove, like, you know, next to the pecan orchard, and they drove down a little dirt lane that led into the pine trees. They took her body into the woods. When you enter into that orchard, there are two barns, one on the left and one on the right, and at the time he indicated that there were large piles of cut pecan wood in those barns, and that they came back and loaded the truck up with large quantities of wood. And over the course of the next 3 days, which had started on that Wednesday, over the course of the next 3 days, they burned her body multiple times, to include throwing household trash into the fire to make it look like a party fire. It was out in the woods.
Now, did Mr. Bojus, I know you said that they came back several times. Did he indicate to you how many times it took to actually get rid of her body?
If I recall, they loaded the first load or two on Wednesday. He was a little about exactly how many loads of wood, but they at least 1.5, 2 loads of wood the first time. They came back again that Thursday, and there were still coals around the body, and that they went back and got more wood and loaded more wood around the body and burned it again.
Now, on that Thursday, did Mr. Dukes Bowdukes indicate whether or not there was any part of her body still left?
I want to say that he indicated there may have been some vertebrae and ribs showing still.
Upon seeing that her vertebrae and ribs were still showing, what did he and this defendant do?
They went and got more wood from the same place that they'd got it originally and reburned it again until there was nothing. And then they returned again. If I recall, he said he returned again at the end and there was nothing but ash left.
Joining me tonight is my co-host here on the Law and Crime Network, criminal defense attorney Linda Kenny Bodden. So, Linda, this is sinister stuff here. We're talking about burning a body to the point where it's gone. There's nothing left.
And that can't happen because the teeth are always going to be left. So the investigators go to that place, which is a burn pit. Kind of sounds almost familiar, doesn't it, Aaron? A case like making of a murderer,
right? Yeah, this sounds familiar.
There's going to be something left there. Even in cremation, which is at a higher rate, there's something left. It sounds like to me the question is, who is the killer here and who was the accomplice after the fact?
Okay, so much of what the investigator said came out of Bo Dukes' mouth.
Correct.
Is Bo Dukes the one who really did most of it, and he's trying to throw his buddy Ryan Duke, without the S, under the bus?
Or is it the other way around? Because remember, Ryan Duke DNA is not found in the house, and Bo Dukes' DNA can't be eliminated in the house. And Ryan Duke only had two DUI convictions, and Bo Dukes is now in jail for attempted rape, kidnapping, and, you know, a felony assault awaiting trial. So, you know, who's more likely, as defense will say.
Okay, look, one of the big bombshells that came out of this hearing, though, today, was that Ryan Duke has DNA, along with the DNA of Tara Grinstead, on a latex glove police recovered in front of Tara Grinstead's home. So if this defendant, Ryan Duke, if his DNA is in the glove and it's near the house, now we've got gloves near houses. This is like a synopsis of famous cases here.
Yeah.
But that puts him somewhere related.
Yeah, and it puts him, as the defense attorney said at the end, could he be accomplice? Could he be accomplice? And the investigator at the very last minute said, well, it is what it is. So this is going to be a hot trial, and I don't mean that as a pun. This is a hard-fought trial.
Yeah, judge denied change of venue, denied a request for an investigator to dig into the background of potential jurors, and they're still arguing about the bond as we speak. We're going to move along, though, here on the Law and Crime Network. Still ahead on The Debrief, a look to a case we're covering this week involving the murders of four people, plus updates in the case we've been covering out of California, the McStay family murder trial, a mysterious check made out to defendant Chase Merritt found on victim Joseph McStay's computer. Does the check lead prosecutors to a motive? That is when The Debrief continues. Welcome back to The Debrief. Jury selection was expected to wrap up today in a case we'll be covering here on the Law and Crime Network as soon as we hear opening statements. 24-year-old Aron Lawson is accused of killing four people and trying to kill a fifth. The victims were Stacy Jackson Holton, her 8-year-old son Devin Holton, and her parents Donald and Tammy McGuire. Tammy McGuire was the defendant's aunt. Lawson led authorities on a 36-hour manhunt before they caught him. He faces 13 felony counts and a possible death sentence if convicted in those murders. Now to the case out of Southern California we've been following for quite some time here on the network. He's accused of killing all four members of the McStay family. Charles Chase Merritt was a business associate to father and husband Joseph McStay. First, the McStays disappeared. Then authorities believe they may have fled to Mexico to avoid debts. Police even pointed to video shot near the border as possible proof. Then the authorities backtracked when a dirt biker stumbled across the family's remains buried in the Mojave Desert. Prosecutors claim the defendant killed for money. Last week, the prosecution showed images of a check from Joseph McStay's business made out to Chase Merritt. The image came from a computer in the McStay family home. The date on the check, February 4th, 2010. That is the date the McStays are believed to have disappeared. The amount of the check, some $4,000. Is the check suspicious? It was never cashed. Merritt told police there was always money moving back and forth between himself and the victim, McStay. They regularly did business together. Also last week, an image grabbed from the defendant's cell phone, which indicates he was searching for information about theories involving the family's murder on February 26, 2014. This was 4 years after the McStays disappeared, about 3 months after their bodies turned up, and about 9 months before Merritt himself was arrested. Also last week, a state analyst showed enhanced security camera images taken from a neighbor's home. Prosecutors are arguing that this is the defendant's truck in the neighborhood where the McStays lived around the time they vanished. Traffic in their area is rare because the family lived on a dead-end street. The state believes the family was indeed murdered at home. Back one more time with Linda Kenny Bodden. So, Linda, yes. Again, here's the big question. I'm just going to keep asking it over and over and over again. How does any of this point directly to this particular defendant? Is it his truck or is it some other worker's truck who is in the neighborhood for some appointment?
Or is it not a truck at all that looks like it, because we don't know whether that analysis is correct, right?
That's is it a sound analysis or did somebody, take an image of a truck and stick it over some other picture?
What bothers me is that Kavanaugh, who is the person that the defense has been pointing to or trying to point to, ran the computers of the website. So anybody could have gotten in. He could have gotten into the computers of the victim, right, and did a check that wasn't cashed. We don't know. So there's no hard evidence, and that's the problem.
Okay, so, what of this Dan Kavanaugh? He claims he was in Hawaii. The police just buy it. They're really zeroing in on this defendant from the get-go. Is it a case where they went after the wrong person from the beginning and they don't know how to back out of it?
Yeah, we don't know. Honestly, I don't know. I mean, I would have looked at Dan Kavanaugh more. You have brutal murders. That's what's about here. And you have the police, apparently defense says through one of the pleadings, they thought that there was a rape of the wife, brutally murdered, hits to the head. Could this guy be the one that does it? It just doesn't smell or look right.
Okay, so the prosecution has taken a long time to lay out the evidence here. Almost too long. What do you think?
Oh, I think that whenever you have a long trial, that goes for reasonable doubt, because if he did it, boom, give it to us. Boom, boom, here it is. We are juries want to hear it. The longer the trial, the better for a defendant.
Okay, all the pictures that have come in, some of them are helpful. Okay, it's helpful to say, the hammer in the grave is likely what caused the wound in the skull. The sizes just match up. But all the pictures of the interior of the house, why are they even relevant?
Well, what they're trying to say is that there's blood spatter on the table that no one ever tested. That is really questionable. The rest of them are totally irrelevant. Matter of fact, they helped the defense. It shows that there wasn't a brutal murder in that house.
Linda Kenny Bodden, appreciate your insight here on The Debrief. And that'll wrap things up for The Daily Debrief tonight. I'll see you right back here at either 4 o'clock or 5 o'clock. The schedule, of course, on The Debrief depends on what's happening in the McStay family murder case. Live trial coverage picks up tomorrow on the Law and Crime Network at 9 o'clock Eastern. And of course, we will continue to monitor what's happening in the Grinstead hearing. Good night.
We'll be right back.